Accession number 30,002, Mr. Eric Harrison, Real 4. Now, you said the big feature of Camden was the civilians.
Yeah.
The American civilians.
The American civilians.
How did you get on with them? What was the relationship?
Well, they were absolutely wonderful to us. We were allowed out on a Friday night from 5 o'clock until about 8 o'clock on Monday morning. And if we went out of the camp, when we got through the guard house, there would be cars lined up waiting for you and sort of saying, would you like to come with me for the weekend? Our mate friend was a gold mine engineer who took me up into the hills. He had two houses. He had one with a gold mine up in the hills, and he had a townhouse. And he took me up to his house in the hills, and it was beautiful. He took me around the gold mine and took me back to the camp again, and on the Monday morning in time for the 8 o'clock curfew. If you, during the day, I mean, we couldn't get out of the camp during the week. People knew that. We had to stay on camp during the week, but we were free at weekends. But people used to come along in the cars and put boxes of peaches, because South Carolina is called the Peach State of America. That's the local name they give it, the Peach State of America, and there are lots and lots of peaches. And they were bringing, a big basket of peaches up and other fruits, completely and utterly unsolicited. If you went to church on a Sunday morning, they used to say to you, if you want your lunch out on a Sunday, go to church. Well, I went to church, and people took me home for lunch. And I ended up in the choir. I mean, I'd been a choir boy in this country until my voice broke. I'd been a choir boy most of my young life. And they put me in the choir, and I became friendly with people. And the townspeople were brilliant. One of the features of their generosity was if two or three of you went into a restaurant and had something to eat, when you sort of said, can I have the bill, let's say, it's been paid. Who's paid it? Well, they're not here now, they've gone. I mean, you didn't even get a chance to say thank you very much in some cases, because they just said, give me the bill for those RAF boys. And
but you were in civilian clothes?
Yeah.
All the time?
Yeah. But they knew you, you see, because you had light grey suit. We all had the same suit, so it was a uniform anyway, just about.
Now, what about any special entertainments put on? You know, a hospitality, but were you given tickets to go to various things?
Oh, well, that was when I went back to New York.
Oh, okay. So after you finished at Camden, anything else you want to tell us about Camden before we move on? You were only there a couple of months, but...
No, I enjoyed my stay there. They did tell me that when I first went there that Camden, South Carolina had never had frost. They said that, and I don't remember one day that we didn't fly when we were meant to fly, whereas over here or in Canada they were being held up by bad weather and things like that a lot. But the weather was absolutely beautiful down there. And can I just say one statistic that I should tell you? The contract with General Arnold was for him to teach 3,000 pilots to fly. He taught 13,000. I mean, the scheme was so successful. And then, of course, you see, I left there about October. Pearl Harbor was December.
And yeah, we'll come back. Cause it was a successful scene. Now, you then went to Moncton Camp late October, and you were there till November. Now, this is when you had your birthday at Moncton.
That all fits in.
Now, anything you remember about your trip to Moncton this time, or is it just a depot now?
No, that was only a receiving depot. I then had to go in front of a tribunal to see what they were going to do with me. I mean, if you wanted to get back to England, and quite a number of them did want to get back to England, they would say, I'd like to be a rear gunner. And the only place they trained rear gunners was England, so they got back to England. And that's how some of them got home early. I elected to be an observer.
Why an observer? Tell me what was going on.
Well, because I could use my mathematics, and I'd done okay at astronavigation and at training schools, and at the ITW, I'd got a thirst for it. An observer had exactly the same status as a pilot. He got the same salary. He had the same promotion opportunity. It was a big personal blow to me to lose the opportunity of gaining my pilot's wings. And so I wanted a good wing, and the good wing was an observer. I mean, observers nowadays can be captain of planes.
Yeah. So what happens next then?
Well, I went in front of the tribunal, and the tribunal, the person that was in charge of the tribunal was a chap called Massey, and he was Raymond Massey's brother, the film star. And he went into my history and worked out that I would make I'd be okay as an observer. So I was posted to Prince Edward Island.
To where?
Prince Edward Island, to an astronavigation school.
Now, what was the name of the place you went to join there at Prince Edward Island? That was the
Charlottetown. Charlottetown was where the airfield was. Charlottete, and then town, all together.
All one word.
Charlottetown.
So that's the name of the airfield.
That's the name of the
And this was the astral navigation? Sorry.
ANS. ANS.
Astral navigation.
Air Navigation School.
Air Navigation. Yeah. Right, sorry.
Yeah.
So you went there in November.
Yeah.
Now, what was the setup there when you got there?
Well, I was there to learn navigation, solely navigation. I didn't have anything to do with aeronautics, which I'd been doing down in Camden. We'd done aeronautics, but there was no aeronautics up at Charlottetown. It was navigation, and that was some of it was astronavigation, and some of it was the regular routine navigation.
Now, how difficult was it?
Pardon?
How difficult did you find it? Some people do find it difficult, as you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I didn't find it difficult. I did very well there, but I can't have done well enough to get commissioned. Because there were some people, my great friend, he was commissioned, but he was a university lad, and he was a borough engineer in civil life, and we found that the university types were the ones that were commissioned invariably. I mean, that was because they were more intelligent, I suppose, but leadership's part of it.
So tell me anything about the navigation skills. What specific skills were you learning, if you can remember, if you can make it to it and understand it? So what were you learning? I know it's a bit difficult to tell.
Well, we were learning to navigate a plane from A to B, not necessarily all the time using compass, because in the dark you haven't got that opportunity, so you've got to navigate by radio, taking radio fixes. We were using a radar navigation, which was called GEE, and we were using astro sextants.
which of those did you? So you had to do all of these things.
Yes, we had. Yes, we'd have to do all of that.
Now, how did you do with the three of them? So taking them one by one, Astro. Any trouble with Astro?
Well, no, I didn't have any trouble with Astro. I was very interested in it. And
how far into it did you go? Because it's quite a big subject. I mean, how far into astro navigation did you go?
Well, we navigated by it. I mean, I had to use it when I came back to England. I had to use navigation when I was flying on operations at night time, and we were, we weren't going over Germany and using beacons and radios and things like that. Flying over the Atlantic, there's nothing like that around, and so you have to, if you.
So you do use the stars. Yeah. And what about the other side? You mentioned wireless one. Is that G, you said?
Well, no, G was a radar.
Oh, so wireless.
Wireless, you'd tune into a radio station. Say you were in the in the Bay of Biscay, you could tune into Paris, or you've got to get a couple of stations, three stations that cross so that you get a cocked hat, a line of navigation, a line from the station. You get one, we'll say, from Paris, you get one from Bilbao, you get one from Ireland. So you've got to be able to find those stations and know where they are on your map, and get a fix off them, get a bearing off them.
Now the third was what was radar. Now, is this G? Explain G to me.
Well, G, yeah, was a pulse that was sent out.
That's a pulse of what, radar energy or what?
Yes, it would be a radar, yeah, pulse, which was sent out, and it hits a point of land and returns, and it measures itself, because they know what the speed of the pulse rate is, the speed of light, and it calculates how many seconds it's taken to go there and come back, and halves it, and it tells you... you plot that on your map, and your bearing from that particular point.
Now, anything else you were learning there? That's enough, but I mean, how long were you there for?
Well, I don't know, it's down there. I'd be there for 4 or 5 months. I was there.
Now, we've just looked it up, and you were there. It's my fault. I know it's always easy when someone's told you. You went to Charlottetown in December, and then you went to Picton for Gunnery Park in April. So it's a four or five month course, as you said. So was it practical or was it theoretical? I mean,
what?
I mean, did you do any flights and practice?
Oh yeah.
So you'd learn it on the ground first, I presume.
Well, we
theory,
were.
We
were flying straight away. The first thing you would do would be out on a map reading exercise.
Tell me what a typical map reading exercise was.
Well, you would fly around the island, and you would be able to say where you were by looking at your chart, and your chart would have the island on it and the various points on it, and we would use a handheld compass. It was just a thing that you put in your hand like that, like an ice cream cone, and you just put it on Beachy Head, for instance, you would know, the compass would tell you what your bearing was from Beachy Head, and then you would plot that on your map, and then get one from another source, and where the two crossed was where your point was over the sea.
And what else were you doing? What other flights?
Well, then we would navigate, we'll say, from Charlottetown to Halifax, and we would have to do that by whatever means we could, radio bearings of radio stations, and handheld bearings of your handheld compass, just general navigation, really.
And which aircraft were you flying?
We were flying Anson's.
And what did you think of the Anson?
Well, the Anson's, an Anson really, in a way, depended on which one you got. I mean, the first Anson, you just have to wind the wheels up, and it was the navigator's job to sit alongside the pilot, and when he said, wind the wheels up, we just have to do that. And that was before he started. But then...
A big job, I mean...
Oh, yeah, that was awful, that. People used to hate that. And then later on, when you got the a later maker, he just pressed the button and the wheels retracted.
But what was it like as an aircraft? Can you just sort of give us a picture of it?
Yeah, I used to be airsick in it. I was never airsick as a pilot, but I was as a navigator.
Was it particularly the Anson? Was it particularly likely to make you sick?
Well, you know, you get thrown about by wind and things like that, really. That's what it buffeted about by. Bad weather. If you were flying in an Anson in perfect weather, you would be okay.
Was it a comfortable aircraft normally?
Yeah.
Not too drafty?
No, there was no drafts at all, no.
And what, was it reliable?
Yeah. I never had any trouble in any of them.
So that was it, the aircraft you were flying these exercises in. Anything else you were doing while you were there? It's a long time you were there.
Yeah, well, no, we were enjoying our time outside of the RAF station. That was where I learned to ice skate.
Tell me about it. So what sort of recreation did you get up to with the Canadians this time, or the Nova Scotians, or whatever?
Well, it was mainly ice skating, that was all, because, you know, I lost...
Did you do that?
Pardon?
Well, was there a rink, or was it just on ice?
Yeah, there was an ice rink in... Every town had ice rinks, and there were even private rinks where people, ponds had frozen over solid. I mean, I lost my wallet while I was there and getting out of a taxi and, yeah. And I was very, very friendly with an ex-mayor of the town. He was absolutely marvellous with me. And, he went down to the local radio station and broadcast the news to all the locals that I'd lost this wallet and I was destitute. But he said to me, we won't find it until the spring, because there's about 6 feet of snow on the side of the road, you see, and a hell of a lot of snow. And there's always keeping the runways clear.
How did you get on with the Canadians?
Would you follow that on? Canadians were great. I would think that they weren't quite as good as the Americans, but there was no hostility at all from either Canadians or the Americans. They were just pleased to see us and do what they could. And you know, people used to be so generous. Prince Edward Island went for 2 Christmas dinners because my mayor friend, he invited the 2 of us for to go and have Christmas dinner with them. And then later on, his friends, who'd also befriended us, said, would I like to go for Christmas dinner? And I said, well, we're already going to so-and-so's, you see, and we've accepted there. And they said, well, come along after you've finished your meal. And, I mean, we finished dinner about 3 o'clock, and we were eating another one at 5 o'clock. They were having one sort of early evening, and, you know, we had to do that so generous people were. And, you know, if you went out with them for a meal, you couldn't pay for anything. You couldn't pay for a round of drinks or for the meal or anything like that. They were very, very generous. They used to send my girlfriend, as she was then, they used to send her...
You said wife earlier, but you meant girlfriend.
My wife-to-be, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. They used to send their parcels and, I mean, they didn't just befriend me, they befriended the family, really.
Now, while you were there, around about this time, the Americans come into the war, or rather, they
yeah, into Pearl Harbor.
What do you, how did that impact? I mean, you weren't in America then.
No, I wasn't. No.
What did you think? I mean, did you have any impression of it from where?
Well,
you
were we were pleased that they were involved because they were very, very anti-British. I mean, if you want to switch that off a minute, I'll tell you something. Now, well, I had an uncle who worked on. Randolph Hearst was the name of the fellow who was the newspaper man, and he of course published all his anti-British work in the newspaper, and my uncle was a cartoonist on the New York Daily News, and he used to do cartoons which were pro-British. I mean, he was British himself. It was my mother's brother, and who had emigrated there, and he lost his job as a cartoonist, because all he could do was pro-British cartoons. He couldn't think anti-British, and so he lost his job. They took him off it. And
now, did it all change after Pearl Harbor?
Yes, it changed somewhat. I mean, I did go down into America. You know, there were only two things rationed in America, and one was shoes and the other was petrol. The other was tyres, car tyres. That's the only things that were rationed. So it hadn't got any other direct effect. Of course, people were called up into the services, and you know, you'd get friendly with families who'd got sons. They were looking after you because they hoped that somebody was looking after their son.
We'll come on to that again. That's about the end. So what happened? Anything else happened that you want to tell us about Charlottetown the airfield on the island? Anything before? Was there a test at the end of it? I mean, were you?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, of course, yes, yes.
So tell me about how you were assessed then.
Well, there'd be. You would be assessed when you went on a navigation exercise. You would hand your navigation chart into the navigation officer, who'd mark it. You know, you might end up 40 miles out when your ETA was, we'll say, 1,200 hours, and you got there at 1,315. People weren't so pleased, and you would have to. Dissect your chart navigation wise to see where you'd made your mistake, and there was sort of investigations as to what had gone wrong. But as far as I remember, I didn't really find much difficulty, but some of the people did, and they got chucked out.
Now, what did you? Is this when you passed as an observer, or what did, when you passed the course, what did it mean? What were you?
Well, I just passed the navigation part at Charlottetown. Of my training to be an observer. The next thing I had to do was, as we've already discovered, was to go to Picton, Ontario to do the gunnery. And
What was the name of the place where you went to? Was it just a gunnery school?
Or yeah, Picton Gunnery School, yeah. We flew in battles, ferry battles.
And what were they like? they're quite a well-known.
I was going to say, I bet you don't know anybody that's ever flown in one.
Tell me about them.
A ferry battle. We had to go down in the nose and pull back a metal slide, and we were open to see the ground, to see what we were bombing. And the engine, of course, was in the nose as well, and all we got was the blowback of all the oil. So you go down there to bomb, and by the time you came back, you were covered in oil. And people used to hate that. That was awful. I don't know why we had battles.
And what was the gun turret mount? What was it, and what guns were you learning?
Well, we're just using Browning 303s.
Have you done much work on the Browning? Tell us what you learnt about the Browning.
I don't know. I can't remember. I never had to use them.
So it was just, that was the gun you were being taught on?
Yeah.
And would you get to fire it much?
Well, we did. We were firing at drogues with the guns. We were bombing on lakes. We were bombing targets in lakes, and they would measure what your accuracy was. There'd be somebody down below who was taking a notice of where the bomb dropped and you know how far you were away, and you were assessed as a good bomb aimer or a bad one or whatever. But I must have been okay at both, because I passed that part of the course. And then because I'd learnt my navigation and I'd learned my bombing and I'd learned my gunnery, and at the navigation school we were taught radio, how to transmit Morse code, we had to learn all those four things.
So what did that mean? When did you qualify then?
We qualified about the beginning of June.
Now what did that mean, qualifying? I mean,
well, I was presented with my observer's badge, which was an O.
And were you made a sergeant at the same time?
I was a sergeant, yeah.
But not commissioned?
I wasn't commissioned, no.
But some of them were?
Some of them were, yeah.
Now, how did it feel? Was this an important moment for you?
Sorry.
When you were, you know, when this happened, that you were made a sergeant and an observer? Because you've been aiming for it for quite some time, haven't you?
Yeah, I thought that I was worth a commission. But I wasn't on the basis that I hadn't been to university, you see. People tell me that it was the university types that were getting commissioned. That's
you mentioned
not,
this earlier.
Yeah, that's not strictly true, but it was a good CV to have, if you were a good navigator, and you were a university chap, the chances were you would get commissioned.